Hi, everybody. This is John with Out of Character, and this is our first ever session where we will be playing Adventures in Middle-Earth from Cubicle 7. For those who have yet to hear about this role-playing game, it's essentially Dungeons & Dragons, but with a lot of different classes and done in the Middle-Earth Tolkien universe. So it is very, very different than a normal D&D game, and we were very excited about it. A lot of us are big Tolkien fans. So, yeah, we're going to be doing this. This is going to be one of our ongoing things. And joining me today, we have one of our regular players.
Hi, this is Jason, and I'll be playing the scholar, David Gillis.
What culture are you?
I am a human of Minas Tirith.
So yeah, unlike in D&D, you don't have races. There are still dwarves and elves, but you have cultures like the men of Minas Tirith, the dwarves of Erebor, the elves of Mirkwood, and so on and so forth. So this will be Jason's introductory game as David Illis. I kept thinking, how do you say your last name?
Gillis.
Gillis. I keep thinking of Bear Grylls. And I just picture like someone like trying to do like a Middle Earth version of Bear Grylls. Like, what you gotta do is you gotta rip the orc guts out because they're very high in protein. Get all the meat in your gums.
You can use the intestines to floss afterwards.
Oh no! You know, I was gonna try to do this as like a more serious game, and we already fucked that up. We are starting in the city of Minas Tirith, the crown city of Gondor, the great city. Many would say. It does stand near many other formerly great cities that have fallen into disrepair. This is pretty much the seat of an empire that was once arguably the greatest of mankind. Since the Kings of Men fell, it has been under the stewardship that has continued for centuries and centuries. They're currently on their 24th steward, I should say. Basically, it is a city that's kind of in stasis. It's waiting for the return of a king that may never come. And it's on the border of Mordor, which is basically the doorstep of evil. They've been under attack by pirates. They've been under attack by wild men from, you know, wicked men from other parts of the world. And their only steadfast ally in all these wars and battles have been the Riders of Rohan. Other than that, they're known throughout the world, but they're not really viewed as favorably as they once were. They've lost a lot of their former grandeur and power. And you are one of these men, if you would. Where are you in your great white city today?
Well, I'll start off in my apartment, which is on the grounds of the college that I work at. I am a botanical scholar, and my work takes me frequently out onto the highways and byways of Middle-earth, searching out new specimens to research, draw illustrations of, and make a couple of sample collections to bring back for the botanists of the college. Along the way, I've met many people in my travels. I usually try to create a strong fellowship of fellow travelers before I depart to the hinterlands, and I'm relatively happy-go-lucky. I've had almost no problems with brigands or raiders along the way. A couple of small incidences, but nothing that my natural charisma couldn't get me out of. Whenever I'm back in the city, I have a relatively small apartment. I've got a housekeeper that makes sure that it's kept clean whenever I'm gone, and my college supports my efforts. I have an arrangement with the dean where the trust that I was left whenever my father died is being used to pay for my education, and now that I am a employee of the college, help with grants for the research trips that I make.
What's in your housekeeper's name?
Mary. She's an elderly woman. To ask her age would be impolite, but she does have more than a few gray hairs.
So describe your apartment, if you would. Is it?
It's relatively small. It has a small goose down bed in one corner. There is no room for cooking. I usually go out to a vendor or a tavern to take my meals. There's no use storing food in my apartment since I'm gone most of the year. I've got a bookcase that I keep most original copies of all of my works in, and some scrolls and books that I've collected over the years. I have a glass-fronted display case on one wall, about 3 feet by 3 feet, with some of the rare dried botanical samples that I've collected over the years. It is my pride and joy, and I always love explaining where and how I found each one of the many specimens to anyone that I bring up to the rooms, often much to their boredom. The apartment I'm in has a shared bathroom with the other apartments. So that's about it for my apartment. It's maybe about 15 feet by 30 feet. No bigger.
So the housekeeper is not really your housekeeper. It's like the person that's cleaning all the apartments for the faculty and staff members that are...
Correct.
Tenure. All the tenure folk. Okay. It is. It sounds very much like a student apartment. You know, there's no food. There's just kind of like, it's a room. There's a place to sleep. This is where I keep my cool botanical sample. I have some books, and I'm leaving.
Yes.
So, what are you doing in your apartment on this evening?
Well, I'm actually preparing to go off on yet another research expedition. My pockets had run out of coin, and I taught the students as much as I could for my last research expedition. So I've just finished writing up a grant proposal to give to the dean, as is my habit, and I'm going to take it up to his office and have a quick chat. He'll sign off on it, and then off I'll go.
So you're basically assembling what you would need. You're right. Your bags are packed, and you're ready to head out. You just need the
coin. Just need the coin.
The coin and the signature that's you're sure to get.
Yes.
Okay. Any sadness about leaving?
No, I actually am quite expectant of departing to the hinterlands. Supposedly, the foothills of Mordor have a rare moss that is a purplish sheen, said to have powers over insects. Now, the reports that have come to me are very unclear as to what these powers may be. Some have said that it causes insects to dance in a frenzy on the moss and then fall over dead. Others say that it causes them to glow and wander around. The reports have varied in strange and unusual ways, but all of them have correlated to this one type of moss. So
you're going towards Mordor. This is not a long journey, but a dangerous one potentially.
Yes.
Okay. As some people may not know, Minas Tirith is very, they say location, location, location. They chose poorly because Mordor is basically their next door neighbor.
Now, the mountain chain of Mordor is long. I will be going quite far from the gate.
Okay.
Towards the south.
Okay. So you're going towards the nicer part of Mordor.
Yes.
The nicest parts that Mordor has, at any rate. So while you've been packing everything, you know, your painter's supplies, you are not a warrior. So you have your normal gear, but, you know, not.
I armor myself not with garb, but with company.
I think that's a fancy way of saying you hire mercenaries to protect you.
Now, I find people going in the same direction that are better equipped than I.
Okay, so there's one way in, one way out, no window, correct?
There is a small circular window overlooking the gardens of the college. That's why I selected this apartment.
But only one door.
And yes,
only one. A window that you would not be able to escape through easily if you were online.
It barely cracks open in the summertime.
Did you break it?
No, but if I tried to crack it more than the inch it can open, it would break, yes.
There is a knock, a very resound, forceful beat upon your door, and you can hear that there is someone in the hallway kind of like shuffling their feet. It's very late in the evening. Most of the other professors and students don't really, they know better than to come. They know you're going to leave, and you've basically told everyone at length about this moss that you're going to collect. So everyone just kind of go collect your moss. We'll talk to you when you get back. What do you want to do?
Well, I want to go up to the door, mm-hmm. and I'm going to rap on it from the inside and go, excuse me, can I help you?
You hear a man's voice coming under the crack in the door. Open the door, nephew.
Pugsley, I have no time for you today. I'm going to be leaving soon, and honestly, what can I talk to you about today, Uncle, that would not make us both angry at the end?
I have a business proposition, and I'd rather not discuss it through the door. Unless you plan to escape through the window, you'll have to open the door to come and deal with me at some point.
Come in, Uncle. I open the door. And
so you open the door.
Wave him to the bed because there's only one other chair in the room, and I'm not going to let him sit on that and crack it like he did last time.
Do you immediately settle yourself in the chair?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So when you open the door, a shorter than average man, kind of not fat, but very well jowled in the face, you know, kind of pudgy, but he has this look of someone who does a lot of physical labor, very calloused hands. He does not look like a blubbery merchant type. He looks more like a squat guy who could break your nose if he wanted to. When he comes to the door, and you do notice, like, his hair is properly short, very unattractive, cut, like, basically went to a barber and said, like, shave my head but leave a little stubble. His clothing is a lot nicer than what he was wearing the last time you saw him. It's, you know, this is the what you would expect of, like, a very well-heeled merchant, wearing a very nice traveling cloak. You do notice that he has a dagger on his belt. These clothes look new. They are in no way damaged or, like, stitched or anything. He does settle himself on the bed, which groans beneath him as the corner kind of sags down. He looks around the room very appraisingly at everything. Small room for a big mind.
You know that I spend very little time in this room. The whole world is my apartment. But you're not here to talk to me about where I live and where I go. I can see from what you're wearing that you've tossed off your old rags. So obviously you found some new investor to roll into your projects. So out with it. What is it that you want this time, Uncle?
I require your expertise, and I am willing to offer a coin in exchange.
I'm taken aback, to be honest. Every other time you've been here, you've been asking for a coin. What, pray tell, is this that you need of me?
My business takes me to Mirkwood. I have made an arrangement with certain landed individuals there who would make use of the lumber, and they have left me to oversee the project. I have come back to Minas Tirith to recruit a few laborers, as no one who lives within 10 leagues of that cursed place will go near it and set into the trees.
I have been to Mirkwood several times, and I can tell you this. I've escaped with barely my life on half those occasions, and those were the halves where I actually came close enough to Mirkwood to get into the forest. Going in fully, not just to the edge, going in fully and modifying the forest in any way. I've heard of people who went in just on a dare to scratch their lover's name into a tree that would never see him again. The mere idea of going into Mirkwood to cut down the trees, that's a fool's errand. Who did you get to invest in this crazy scheme?
I assume you've heard of King Bard.
Yes, I've heard of King Bard. But go on. Tell me how you convinced him to go fully mad.
I didn't so much convince him as someone that he rewarded with lands for their aid during the Battle of the Five Armies. They are not wealthy, and Mirkwood is poor for farming. Not much use for anything, truth be told. His land exists on the very outer edge, far from any danger. But again, he has lived in that area all his life and is not interested in venturing too close to the woodlands. You would be in no danger, and our operation would only exist on the outermost edge of the Mirkwood itself. We would not venture beneath the trees.
Let's say, for sake of argument, because I'm always willing to take a mental challenge, for sake of argument, what is it that you would ask?
I need a botanist who can catalog any unusual specimens, warn our workers of possible plant life that could prove dangerous or detrimental to their health. Take samples, record, write books. You can call it a journey in Mirkwood for all that it matters to me. You'll be paid well for your work.
I have 4 grad students that would be more than happy to go along with you on this quest. And to be honest, I could not stand your company.
You wouldn't have to endure my company.
And to be pinned down with a camp of your laborers, the smelly louts, for who knows how long? No, Uncle. I can get you set up with some people that would be more than happy to assist you, competent people. But this is just not something I'd be willing to bear. I have planned my expedition for so long, and at this 11th hour, for you to ask me to throw it all up in the air, put it off till the off season, whenever the snows come back to Mordor. No, I'm sorry, Uncle. I just cannot do it. You'll have to find someone else. I can help you find someone else, or you can ask someone outside of my ken. It does not matter.
I can see that you've made your mind, nephew, and I will not sail upon you to change it. I'm sorry that you won't join me in this opportunity. I hope to bridge this gap that has grown between us. My brother, your father, has been dead for years now. Your sister is no longer of the city. I have no family left in Minas Tirith except for you. But if you will not join me in this adventure, I will happily accept whatever recommendations. Would you? I understand you are to be off on a journey. If you could take the time to write them out before you leave,
I can do that now, and I'll get out a paper. There's a good 5 or 6 grad students I know of, and putting down the one I hate the most, the one that I hate the second most, the one I hate the next most.
There's another knock on your door, much more forceful than the one before, and you can hear the sounds of several people outside in the hall. Your uncle looks towards the door. Are you expecting company?
No. The porters are supposed to be here tomorrow morning.
Are you going to answer it?
Of course. Get up off the bed, go to answer it.
You see 5 armored and armed soldiers of Minas Tirith. The breastplate bearing the famous white tree of the city. The famed winged helmet. They are in full ceremonial garb. The one that clearly knocked on the door has his hand on the hilt of his sword. He looks you up and down as soon as you open the door.
Can I help you, sirs?
You are to come with us.
One moment, and I will be right with you. So I turn around and hand the list to my uncle and say, Uncle, I've been called away. I wish you the best of luck, and maybe next time I go to visit my sister, I will stop by your camp and see how they've been going and see how many of my grad students you've run through.
If you change your mind, I will be in the city for several days making my arrangements here. He rolls up the piece of parchment, kind of like carefully ambles his way past the armed guards, watches them as they observe him, and makes his way towards the exit of the dormitory, you know, housing area. The guards are still watching you. They are blocking your passage.
I'm going to go over to the door and say, okay, fine, gentlemen, lead the way. And I close the door and lock it on the way out.
They form an escort around you, 2 guys marching about a step behind you, 2 immediately in front and 1 in the lead, bearing a torch as it is dark. They quickly escort you through the city. Now the college is near, like, the Houses of Healing. It is you're not as high as you can go in Minas Tirith, but you're not at the lowest levels. You have lived in this city all your life. Now, you've lived all over, but you know the city pretty well, and they are escorting you to the Citadel. You can tell this almost immediately by the number of barriers that you are quickly being brought through with no who are you, what is your business. They just march you right through. After a few minutes, you pass the white tree itself. This is the symbol of Gondor, of Minas Tirith. It has withered and died. It's been dead for centuries. It died when the last kings fell. There is a ceremonial guard of very similarly attired men to the ones who are escorting you, only they are all wearing, like, black masks so that their faces are completely hidden. They are all armed with spears. They are standing sentinel over this thing. They stay night and day waiting for a sign that this tree will bloom again and that the one king has returned. They bring you past the tree and the fountain outside and lead you into the Citadel itself. As soon as they arrive in front of this door, 2 step to either side of the door of this massive wooden black frame door. 2 more pull the door itself open. The 3rd steps aside. The last remaining man steps aside to allow you entry.
I go in.
So as you step inside, glistening floors of white stone echo with your footsteps as the great doors to the throne room are closed with an audible hush behind you. Pillars of black masonry support blocks of more pristinely white stonework rising upward to a ceiling of purest gold. At the end of the hall rest 2 gray chairs, one of black on a dais raised several feet from the floor, and a second of white raised 10 feet off the floor at the top of a set of stairs. The lower seat is occupied by an aged man with darkly gray hair, the color of a great stone left out in the rain. He wears robes of black trimmed with silver, and he watches you from his chair with a calm expression, betraying neither pleasure nor displeasure at your arrival.
Alright, so I'm going to roll charisma or wisdom, not sure which, wisdom actually, to recall the correct way to greet the king.
Now that would be traditions.
Traditions. So I have 2 in traditions.
Before you do that, because this is our first time playing, there's a great new mechanic in this game called audiences. This is when you're meeting famous people for the first time. It's not just you meet the king and you're like, hey, you're my bro. There's a little more of a social encounter than in some traditional D&D games. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I just felt the need to point that out. So you're going to roll your traditions to try and determine the correct way to greet the steward.
I do have piercing sight.
You do, absolutely.
Which is a skill. For those of you listening, piercing sight is described as follows. It is said that few can hold fast against the piercing eyes of a man of Gondor, that under such a gaze, secrets hidden in the hearts of lesser men are often revealed. The first time you are introduced to another as part of a social encounter, instead of making an ability check using a skill, you may instead fix upon your opponent with a steely gaze. Your target must make a wisdom saving throw against a DC equal to 8 plus your proficiency bonus plus your wisdom score modifier. If it fails, you gain insight into its reasoning, its emotional state, and sometimes that which looms large in its thoughts, such as whatever it worries over, loves, or hates. If it succeeds, its thoughts are veiled to you. So, I'm not going to stare at the king, so I'm not going to use this particular...
No, he's not the king. Very important. He is the ruling steward.
The ruling steward is still effectively the biggest guy on campus.
Yes.
So I'm not going to stare at him. I'm going to use my intelligence check against traditions.
Okay. So go ahead and roll your tradition check. Now, this is to determine the proper way to greet him.
Yep. And I've got a +2 on that. So 14, which is... is it over or under my... I got a 4... All right. So we got a 15 wisdom, +2...
Traditions be a 2, and your int is 2. So, yeah, you just have a 2 in it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you rolled a total of 14.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there are two things that are important about greeting the steward as opposed to greeting the king. A nobleman is always going to be given a certain amount of deference. You are not a noble. You are well-heeled, but you are not, you know, wisdom is respected in Gondor. People of learning are afforded certain courtesies.
But I'm still very young.
You're very young. And you need to show a certain amount of deference, especially in this situation. Greeting the steward is not the same as greeting the king, because they do want to maintain that they are not the kings of Gondor.
Right.
Or of Minas Tirith in any way, shape, or form. They're just...
The steward.
You know that there's no formal greeting, that there's no, like, you know, let hail the hall of Minas Tirith or something like that. It's just show respect, show deference, make sure... They get annoyed when people confuse them. Like, the poor will sometimes think they're talking to the king and get flustered. As you can see from the fact that they're sitting in the steward's chair, they are very much not the king.
Yeah.
But there's no, you know, protocol that you must greet them a certain way. Just show respect and deference. They do tend to like... they're very proud of their city. They're proud of their history. So anything that references back to themselves is more likely to win them over. Do with that what you will.
Steward, how may I assist the city?
The steward is, as I said, he is a very old man. He's nearing the end of his days. He smiles bemusedly when you greet him. You do notice that on either side, one, he has a cane of pure white wood, and at his other side, there is a sword. When you say this, he does kind of, like, lift himself up in his chair a little bit. He was kind of slumped over, rising to his full height, giving you the full impression of the steward. When you make your greeting, he looks at you. Late is the hour of my call. I hope it does not find you unwell.
I am always well to serve the city.
Standing with the support of his cane and leaving his sword, he steps down the short couple of stairs between his dais and the floor and moves down the hall towards you. Each time he puts the cane to the floor, the entire ceiling just kind of like echoes with this dull like thud, thud. He's, you know, he's leaning on it for support, but he is by no means decrepit. When he's within distance to you, a reasonable distance that he can talk to you without shouting, I am told that you are an authority on matters botanical.
I have some skill in that area, yes.
Your humility does you credit.
Thank you, sir.
There is a matter I would discuss, and it would be a great service to this city, but it must be kept a dire secret.
If you wish to move out of this echoing hall and to a smaller private room, I would be more than welcome to follow.
You've noticed when you walked in here, there is no one else in this hall except you and him. And, like, normally there'd be, like, some guards or, you know, servants or something, but it's empty. I have something that I would show you. Would you walk with me?
Yes, sir.
The door is open. The guards who escorted you are still outside. He moves out towards the tree and just kind of looks up at it while the fountain, the water continues to ripple down, filling the pool. I assume that you are familiar with our tree and its history.
Even the smallest child knows the history of the White Tree of Gondor and our hopes and expectations that it may one day bloom for the one true king.
And as a authority in matters of plant life and botany, what would be your description of its current state?
From all appearances, and this is just using my hat as a botanist, from all appearances, the white tree appears dead. However, the mere fact that it has stood here lo these many years with not any rot or any of the branches falling off, but any normal tree would have withered, fallen into rotten disrepair, been broken by winds, and be but a hole in the ground by now. This one, however, has stayed. Two things come to mind, having never touched the tree myself, and only gazed upon it from afar and from stories. Two things occurred. One, the tree is dead and has been preserved in some manner. Say, some magician or elf turned it to stone, or a lacquer and white paint has been applied to it, and glues. The second option is that this tree still retains some amount of life, a inner maintenance that may not allow it to bloom, but keeps the boughs strong.
He reaches into his robes and removes a small piece of folded cloth that he offers to you.
Takes a piece of cloth.
Do you open it?
Yes, I open it.
There is a bud inside, a budding flower. It's difficult to determine the exact pigment because it hasn't fully bloomed, but it is something that was cut and preserved by someone, presumably, who could keep it alive. Mm-hmm. That was delivered to me. Do you know the species?
I look carefully at the flower and any attached branches or leaves.
So, give me a nature check.
Nature! I actually have a 4 in
and
that.
And you have advantage on this.
Alright.
Because you have every right to that. So that's a 1. First. Okay. There we go.
19.
Okay. Wow. I'm an expert on botany.
It's a
turlet plant.
It's dark out.
You have never held, in all your travels, you've touched most of the plants on Middle Earth, not this one. You have to, like, examine this thing, and you've only seen illustrations that are hundreds of years old of this type of flower. And they were illustrations of the white tree when it was in the prime of life.
Who delivered this to you, sire?
One who says they found its like and more in Mirkwood.
To find another of this species. I have my own scientific curiosity about it, but what is your interest in this?
If another tree exists, it could mean the king has returned to the north, to the wilderlands. Or it could mean the tree has resumed life because a king is preparing to return. It would be a great symbol to our people, and I have fear that they will need it in the days to come. Our watchful peace cannot continue forever.
Mirkwood is large. To mount an expedition to cover all of Mirkwood would be prohibitive, both in manpower and time. Do you have any specifics on where in Mirkwood this was found?
The one who brought it to me suggested that he would be willing to help you locate the area that he found it.
And he asked for me specifically?
He asked that I secure the best botanist in Minas Tirith for him. You would have the full support that I can lend you, but this is a mission that must be kept of the utmost secret. If it were revealed to be a fraud or a deception, people would weather it poorly.
Let us say that I did find a seed or nut that I could bring back and grow a second tree. Would that actually be what we would want?
This tree was not the first tree to grow in this courtyard. Several have lived in this courtyard throughout the centuries. Kings live and kings die. The white tree, or one of its like, has always stood here.
I take this new information to heart.
If you would do this service, I can lend you men and coin. But again, you must not reveal your true purpose in the wilderlands to anyone.
This I can do. So are your men to know of the purpose, or shall I have a masking purpose for our mission?
They are soldiers of the Citadel, men of Minas Tirith. I have instructed them that they are to guard the life of the man that I placed them in their service. They are not to question your cause. They know it is for the city. I trust them to do their duty by Gondor and by this city.
It will be a bit difficult to hide a large white tree that is well known in Gondor if we do find it.
If you do locate it, I trust their and your discretion on the matter. So, what I need from you, mm-hmm. as this audience goes on, is I need you to make another tradition check, if you would be so kind.
Mm-hmm. 20. Oh, 21.
There you go. He leans more heavily on his staff and turns back to look at you. Will you do this?
Yes, sire. It would please me to no end to find something as rare and unique as the white tree in the wild. Mirkwood is very dangerous, and I will take your assistance of men wholeheartedly. However, having been through Mirkwood before, I find that a larger company cannot move through the thick forest well, and yet a small company will easily be overwhelmed. I think about 5 to 7 men would be about the right size for the total fellowship.
You will have them. We will see you horsed, the men armed. I would ask you to leave at first light.
I will do so, and it will be my honor.
Is there anything else that you require of me for this task?
I only wish to have a good explanation for my deed as to why I've changed direction.
He shall have. 5 soldiers will be waiting for you. Is there anything... So basically, he starts making his way back towards the Citadel. The soldiers open the doors for him. He looks back at you. He reaches down and he takes a knife off of his belt and he offers it to you.
I gracefully accept it.
You take this knife and do you inspect it or you just take
it? I inspect it.
The sheath is marked with the White Tree of Gondor. It is a fine blade, the like of which you would see in a noble's possession. If anyone questions you on your task, show them that blade, and if they are a true servant of Minas Tirith, they will not question you and they will lend you what aid they can.
I wrap it up in the folds of my cloak.
The doors close, so the soldiers are waiting outside for your instruction. They are been told to conduct you to the stables. Is there anything that you wish to do before we leave the city, sir?
Yes. I'm going to need a writing instrument and a piece of paper. I'm going to write down a list of the provisions that we will need for our journey so that you can have the quartermaster acquire them. I've been to Mirkwood a few times, and the spiders can be troublesome.
You have a pen and paper with you.
Okay.
That was
in your equipment. Yep.
So yeah, you can definitely write out a list. So these are soldiers. They do have, but is there anything specific you're looking for them to acquire?
Double up on your torches.
Lots of torches.
Yeah. Also, you will want to carry with you at all times jars of fat. These are especially useful if the spiders do cocoon you. Being able to break one of those jars open in their cocoon will allow you to get out of them relatively easily.
They look very unnerved by the description of, like, carrying jars of fat, but they don't question it because they've been ordered not to. They conduct you to the royal stables. You do see there are a line of horses reserved for nobility. These are, they've stripped them of most of the armor, so these are not horses that are being ridden into battle. These are horses that are being ridden for speed. 5 soldiers mount up alongside of you and begin, you know, gathering provisions, putting everything that they're going to need in saddlebags, getting everything ready to go. One of the horses is a spotted horse. It's a white spot, very audaciously equipped, like new bit, new saddle, best of everything. You see Pugsley holding the reins and feeding it an apple, and he just looks at you when you come in. Nephew!
What are you doing here at this time of night?
I'm to join in your expedition.
Okay. I did not expect that. I thought you had other things to do in the city for the next couple of days.
When the steward calls, what man of Minas Tirith or Gondor can refuse him? Besides, you won't have much luck finding what you seek without me.
Uncle. A deep sigh. A deep, deep sigh. I go over to one of the men and say, can you saddle me up in the slowest, ugliest horse that you have?
They look confused, but they do not question your order, and they saddle you up. This horse is much less nice. It's an old brown. It looks like the kind of thing that a small child would ride it, mm-hmm, without fear of being thrown. Very, very calm. This thing's not going to win any speed races.
Yeah. Cinnamon, I would like to be less of a target than the bright, shiny merchant at the lead.
They smile. You have no need to fear, sir. So long as we live, you and your uncle shall suffer no harm.
Very good to hear. The spiders like shiny things.
The soldier who has conducted you throughout most of this offers you a scroll case. This steward bid me give this to you before we depart.
I inspect it.
You open the case?
Yep.
It is a very aged, well-kept map of the Wilderland. You know this to be a map of the region around Mirkwood, the north, Erebor, pretty much most of the areas that are not Rohan or Gondor or any of those regions. It is, at a touch, you can tell, centuries old. This is the best map removed from the archives on the Steward's command. He asks that you use it to help complete your task, and if possible, please ensure that it is safely returned upon the end of this journey.
Alright, so take the map.
Mm-hmm. So this is where we get to do something fun and different that we've never done before, so I'm really excited. So all the soldiers mount up, spears, swords, one of them bearing a black flag with a white tree on it. There's no big leave, but you ride through the city, your uncle at the rear with you, mm-hmm. you know, kind of like sitting up in his saddle like he's a big shot. Mm-hmm. The soldiers, there's no grand production out of the city, but they have an honor guard for you. A few people who, you know, poke their heads out the door to see soldiers riding out of the city, but this is a city that has been at war off and on through centuries, so that's not unheard of to see scouting parties go out. The main gates of the city open just for you. And this is unlike any other time you've left home. Your uncle looks at you. Your father would have been proud of you. And he just kind of, like, kicks his fat horse and kind of, like, gallops off a little bit.
I have a moment of consideration about my father. He was a banker, but did like to go visit his clients. And many a time as a child, I would watch him ride away out of the city gates. And for the first time, I'm feeling some of the loss he must have felt every time he left the city. But a new adventure awaits. And so, yeah, I say hey-ya to the horse and catch up.
So the soldiers form a protective flank around you, like you are riding in an interior with your uncle. They did end up departing with 6 soldiers to guard you, and your uncle is mm-hmm. the 7th man. So you did end up with 8 people. Yep. One of the things that I love about this game is the journey mechanic. Rather than just saying, you ride to Minas Tirith, you know, there's an actual, like, little cool mini-game kind of thing that happens with journeys. So, since you've been given the map, mm-hmm. you and these men will follow your command without question. You can assign them roles to take on during this journey. You have more than enough men to fill each role, and if you wish to take any particular job, you can, or you can let someone else fill a role.
As you were explaining about the journey mechanic.
Yes. So, since you have the map, and you have the most experience on the road, the soldiers in your service will fill whatever roles you want them to fill. So, journeys and adventures in Middle-earth, basically, you have roles that you're filling. You have the guide who's basically making all the decisions. They're basically like the Gandalf kind of like, go here, go there. No, no, we won't go under the mountain. The lookout is exactly what you would think. They basically keep watch. You have scouts who clear the trails and set up camp, and hunters who are going off and securing more food. You always have a guide, because if you don't, you're screwed. The other roles may or may not be filled. So you have NPCs to fill these roles for you this time, as you are the first character to be introduced. With the exception of your uncle, all these men will obey you without question. So do you want to just kind of, like, put 2 people in each role so that you have advantage on the checks that would be related, or...
Yep. So I'm going to have 2 people on scout.
Okay.
And give me some names.
Well, the names of the men with you are Sterum, Ulorin, you have Alaric, Luav, and Barathir.
All right. I will assign Sterum and Ulam to scouts for the first day, Alaric and Luav as lookouts for the first day, and Barath as the hunter for the first day, and we will rotate through positions as we go along our journey.
Now, there are 2 things. One, that's their role the whole journey.
Okay, well, so, that's their trip. Okay, that's what they are then.
Now, one thing that I do have a problem with this, I hope they fix this as it goes on, the map that they present is the map I gave to you. I have a different version of that map that's gridded, and it shows me, like, all the danger zones, and, like, don't go here, you'll die.
Yeah.
It doesn't go to... or, like, it's like, you can be a man of Minas Tirith. Okay? You show, like, the uppermost edge of Fangorn and nothing else. So...
The assumption is that...
Yeah.
Up until you get to that point, I would guess the assumption is that everything's easy.
No, because like, Fangorn's right there. So it's like, no, I was just saying, because like, it's like a long journey is 41 grids, and this is 41 grids is huge. So it's going to be a good journey. Just for the purposes of this, because we don't have a map to work from as far as what area, you know. Are you going to stick to the main roads and safe areas?
Sticking to the main roads and taverns until we can't anymore.
Okay, sticking to the safe main roads. Okay. In that instance, what I would like you to do is make what is called the embarkation roll.
D20?
Yep, D20.
And that is a 15.
Okay.
Do I have any advantages?
Well, let's see here. Oh, wait, I'm sorry, it's not a D20, it's a
D12. D12.
And you're going to have some advantages, so go ahead and roll your D12. Okay, so you rolled a 6. Mm-hmm. So you're going to add your survival proficiency bonus.
Survival proficiency bonus is a 4, so that's a 10 now.
Okay, so plus half of your wisdom bonus.
And that is a 1, so that is an 11.
Okay. And then in secret, I adjust that based on the peril rating. Mm-hmm. And that will determine the start of your journey. So, for the purposes of this...
That's right, friends and neighbors, we used a D12 in a D&D game.
Yeah.
Woo!
You weren't even, like, hitting anyone with an axe. So that's the embarkation roll, and I'm sorry if this is not interesting for people who are... Basically, I have a table of stuff. Some of them are, like, very, like, no, almost nothing, and some of them are, like, that's really good for you guys. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but you get bonuses to your rolls. And they just kind of, like, set off how the journey begins. Does it begin with you guys all, like, losing all your supplies, or does it begin with you guys...
The auspiciousness of our journey.
Exactly. So let's see, those two. And then you have the journey events, which, because of you, you're not going to have too many, because you rolled pretty well. What I would need you to do, if you would be so kind, is to roll a d12. And if you would roll it twice for me.
3 and 5.
For the sake of this being an introductory game, basically what happens is you and your uncle and your fellow soldiers are riding for several days. You're covering about 40 miles a day, so you are eating up the distance.
Good clip.
You stick, as you said, to the roads, the well-traveled paths. You're not branching off into Fangorn. You're not going off into, like, areas where orcs might be wandering. You encounter no trouble, and you are greeted as, you know, soldiers and people of substance. Your uncle spends each night basically lounging around doing nothing and just enjoying, you know, being escorted by royal soldiers.
He's living up to his competencies.
Yeah, basically. You know, he does what's asked of him. If they ask him to, like, chop firewood, he's willing to do that, but basically he's not contributing much. The soldiers don't really... It's been a calm, easy journey, and they've responded to your leadership so far. The landscape changes and becomes increasingly unfamiliar to them. You can tell they're a little bit uneasy being so far from home. You've traveled these paths before. Your uncle's even kind of at ease because he's been to Mirkwood. When you come to an old river, you know that this river basically, there was a bridge built that was an old wooden bridge. It basically served its purpose, but it wasn't pretty.
Yep.
And it looks like it's basically collapsed into the river. This is the first big hurdle you've encountered, and that's where we're going to leave you, basically on the far side of this river that you're going to have to overcome in our next game.
All right.
So that is our introduction to Adventures in Middle-earth. I really like this game already. thank you, Jason, for coming out to play. And
no problem.
We will be back with our next introduction for another player and see if we can get them and Jason on the same page.
Or at least the same side of the river.
Same side of the river, yeah. You still have many, many miles to go before you reach Mirkwood, though. And the agents of the Shadow are ever present and vigilant for the good men and the one true ring. Until next time, everybody, thanks for listening. Play lots of games, be safe, and we will see you next time.
Yep, until then, we're out of character.
Bye.